Good morning. This is 1 in 36, a presentation from Anderson Center for Autism, celebrating their centennial in 2024. 1 in 36 is a weekly show devoted to autism spectrum disorder.
Good morning and welcome to 1 in 36, the weekly talk show on topics related to autism spectrum disorder. I'm your host, Eliza Bozensky, Chief Development Officer at Anderson Center for Autism. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Raquel Rozdalski and Dr. Susan DeCenzo, both from Touro College of Dentistry. Welcome to the show and good morning. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Good morning. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. On a personal note, I love talking to dentists. My grandfather was a dentist, so I was introduced at a young age to the non-scary, fun, important, healthy side of dentistry by being able to play in his chair that he had in his office, in his home. So I'm not one of those people who grew up being afraid of the dentist, thank goodness, but there are many people who I know struggle. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on, you know, what collaborations and what kind of work can be done in the field overall, and both in both of our fields, specifically when it comes to helping people with autism and with other neurodivergencies and behaviorally complex needs. We're going to get to that. For the first part, I would like to just have you kind of tell us a little bit about both of yourselves, your background, what you do with Touro, and kind of what you're interested in. So I'm going to start with you, Dr. Rozdalski, if that's okay. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Hi, I'm Dr. Rozdalski. I am a dentist anesthesiologist. I am also the director of anesthesia here at Touro College of Dental Medicine, as well as the co-director of our fellowship for special care dentistry at Touro.
Great. We're going to get back to all of that, the anesthesiology and also the fellowship, which I'm definitely interested in hearing more about. But thank you for that. And Dr. DeCenzo, what about you?
Yes. Hi, I'm a general dentist and I'm director of special needs here at Touro College of Dental Medicine. And I am the co-director with Dr. Rozdalski for our fellowship for special needs.
Awesome. Now, I will get to the special needs fellowship in a second, but I'm curious, just generally in the field of dentistry right now, do you know the trends? Like, is dentistry an increasingly popular field that you know, young professionals are moving into, or are you actively, is the profession actively seeking people to come into dental colleges? I'm just curious. If you don't know the answer, that's fine. It was just a thought off the top of my head, whether we're seeing an influx and an increase in dentists in our country or a decrease.
I can't speak directly to how many are applying each year and if it's increasing or not at this point in time. I do know that we need to maintain our dentists in New York State.
Okay.
We have a lot of general practice residencies here in New York State. So we end up with dentists for the first year out of school. And then what typically tends to happen is we lose our dentists to other states. So we are actively trying to keep dentists here and get them in more remote areas outside of the city.
Yeah, that would make sense to me. I think, first of all, what's going on in our in the world anyway, you know, people are, ever since COVID and probably before that, but certainly the movement throughout the states is increasing. And but on top of that, I think the interest in getting more dentists out to different locations and more rural locations is so key. That's one of the things we're going to be talking about today, is how can we work together to provide access to needed services to a generally underserved population of people. Rural living is just one of the factors that's involved with that lack of access, but it's a big one. And because New York State is so big, but yet people often think that we're all New York City, and we know that that is not the case. And actually, where I live in the Hudson Valley, most people in the southern part of the state refer to us as upstaters. And that is also not really true. If you talk to somebody north of where I live, they laugh at that. And I'm certainly not allowed to call myself from upstate. So it's very interesting. And we do have a lot of rural areas where we're, from a behavioral standpoint and an autism standpoint, we are also embarking on the same type of journey, trying to figure out creative ways with challenges to funding and resources and staffing to reach those underserved populations. So that's great to hear. And we'll just underscore that as we talk. So let's go back to the Fellowship for Special Needs. Either one of you can take this, whoever wants to just share a little bit more about what that is and how it came to be.
Sure, I can I can take that one. So the Fellowship for Special Needs is actually something that was born out of New York State Academic Dental Centers. And it's globally referred to within New York State as a fellowship to address oral health disparities. So we have representatives from each of the six academic dental centers in New York State that formed a committee to develop an idea of what we could do with funding that was provided originally from the Mother Cabrini Foundation and now through New York, to be able to improve upon the access to care issues for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so from that, we developed a fellowship program, which is a one-year postgraduate program, provides additional training and experience within various facilities for training for working with individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, really targeted for general dentists. And the hope is that we have more general dentists out in the community that feel comfortable and prepared and available to work with the population that has, as you've correctly identified, has been marginalized. And so through Toro, we've had two fellows come through the program so far.
And how long has the program been in existence?
2 years.
Two fellows. Okay, great. So are you specifically looking for one fellow per year, or is there the opportunity to grow that and include multiple fellows in a single year?
Right now, we are hosting one fellow per year at our institution, but our institution is interested in more, as long as the New York State funding allowed for that. But right now, it's one per institution.
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to funding, unless you get to the point where you can be really creative about finding private grantors who will support the whole thing. But that's tricky, even if you can get some. We run into the same thing. So, but that's really exciting, the concept of it. And I love hearing that this is really specific to increasing general dentists' experience with and real understanding of how to effectively work with an IDD population. I don't think I have to tell you, but we'll just repeat for the people listening. When we talk to families, when I talk to families, and through Anderson, I get a chance to talk to a lot of families, one of the biggest things that they talk about when it comes to what they still see as really needed services that just don't exist, that they can't find. There's a couple sort of top ones. They often talk about the lack of pediatric neurologists, people who will diagnose autism, and dentistry is right up there. And then they go into stories about really what it's been like raising a child with autism and or severe IDD and having to sort of constantly reprioritize what is most important. And it always comes down to the safety and health of their loved one, but often at the expense of there's no way that I can get to a dentist's office, much less have my child sit through a dental visit. And also we hear from families who say, well, I was able to get my child into a dentist's office, but they were asked to leave because they didn't know what to do when he started to, engage in SIB or needed a break partway through the exam and they were on a schedule and couldn't handle that. So can you talk a little bit, we have 2 minutes, but we can come back to this after the break too. What are some of the big priorities that you focus on in the fellowship to help prepare these dentists for hopefully getting into this field?
Well, I think one of the things that we're prioritizing is training general dentists. Because as you mentioned, our pediatric patients are able to go to pediatric dentists who have extensive training in behavioral guidance and kind of making different modifications that honestly, general dentists just don't have that type of training, that it's sort of extensive training in it. So our fellowship is really focused on highlighting this for general dentists so that we can enhance and increase the number of general dentists that will treat this patient population so that when they age out of a pediatric dental practice, which they ultimately will, now we have people that we can refer them to that are still competent and a good resource for these families.
And what do you find is the response so far? You've had two fellows come through your particular program. At the end of their fellowship, do they share with you what the impact has been for them and maybe what they're planning to do after they leave?
So it's interesting. One of our fellows that just graduated last year, he has a full-time position at a center where he's primarily treating individuals with IDD. And he's very enriched in this position and just loves what he does. And our current fellow has multiple different job opportunities being offered to her because she's such a valuable asset. And she's certainly loving what she's doing here every day. And she feels so fulfilled. So I think that's the message message that we would want to get out to other general dentists is it's getting over the fears of your own fears so that you can also be enriched by treating populations.
That's great to hear. And I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's like any other specialty and subspecialty and subspecialty. After that, you end up with a skill set that, and I want to get this part out because it resonates all the time throughout these conversations that I get to have. I would think that a lot of what your fellows are taking away with them are going to help them with these opportunities that might really be specifically a great match for them. But it's also, I'm guessing, helping them become just a better, more sort of confident, experienced general dentist for the entire population. Sometimes we think so specifically, like I'm going to learn this so that I can work with an IDD population, but really it's I'm going to learn this and then I'm going to be a better resource for all of my clients and all of my patients. You're both nodding. The people, they can't hear, but you sound like you're, it looks like you're
100% agreeing.
Okay. All right, good. That's great to hear. Because I think that, to me, that's what, that's when you know that you've hit on something that's really effective and hopefully sustainable. And we also want New York State to hear this, and we want other colleges to hear this, that this is something that more people should be doing and have access to doing. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll get into more of the nuances of the fellowship and the future and your the impact that you hope to have. This is 1 in 36, the weekly talk show on topics related to autism spectrum disorder. I'm your host, Eliza Bozensky, and we'll be right back.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
And now, 1 in 36 continues on 100.7 WHUD. This is a weekly community affairs program presented by the Anderson Center for Autism.
Welcome back to 1 in 36, the weekly talk show on topics related to autism spectrum disorder. I'm your host, Eliza Bozensky, and I'm talking with Dr. Rozdalski and Dr. DeCenzo, both dentists with Touro College for Dental Medicine. Did I get the name right this time? Okay, great.
Yeah,
Touro College for Dental Medicine. Well, I'm sorry?
You got it.
Okay, good. We were just talking about how the fellowship for special needs works and your two fellows who graduated and kind of the impact that they're having, which is really widespread and awesome. I did not realize that there was such a difference between the way that pediatric dentists are trained, that they get much more of a focus on sort of accommodations and flexibility versus general dentists. However, it makes perfect sense because it's, and it often happens when you're talking about young children and even adolescents, there's sort of a, I think there's a much more widely accepted sense that there's going to be lots of anxiety. There might be, some fear. There might be just some extra energy in the exam room and things like that. That makes more sense. What do you think about the, I don't know if it's a stigma or if it's just a myth maybe, that adults at age, whatever, 18, 20, 22, suddenly don't feel those things when they're walking into a dental appointment. What's your experience with that?
That's definitely a myth. it's very person specific. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you were familiar with dentistry because of your grandfather and right. You had exposure. But someone could have an early on exposure that is not such a pleasant experience, or you could have, experiences that are similar to, this feeling of being at the dentist and claustrophobia and so many things that can intersect with that feeling of sitting in a chair and not being able to speak. It's so patient specific. And just because you're a certain age doesn't mean that you aged out of that experience. And so it's really important as a dentist to understand throughout a person's life how to help them through that process.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think that this type of work is so important and so important that people recognize that while the impetus is for the creation of the program is the IDD population and the fact that people with special needs, especially things like autism that really impact one's ability to communicate effectively, to indicate that hurts, that's too much pressure, all those things, that are asked of us when we're in the dental chair. And you all rely as dentists on us indicating in some way that hurts. That's too uncomfortable. I can't open my mouth any wider. If you're limited in terms of the way you can communicate, that's going to have a big effect. But let's dive into that specificity a little bit for now. What are some Just give an example of maybe a couple of things that you want to make sure that your fellows take in when it comes to setting up their space or hiring their, you know, the rest of their team, or just being with an individual patient in their care. As a general dentist, we're talking about probably adults, maybe coming in independently, maybe being brought in by a caregiver or a family member. What are some of the things that they learn in this fellowship that you think are most important?
So I might expand this and answer kind of in two parts, not just about the fellowship, but also about our pre-doctoral program. Our two fellows that have come through here are graduates of Touro College of Dental Medicine, too. And I would stress that some of the key points of being a general dentist and going out into practice, every patient that walks in your door should have the same type of assessment. And so you need to be able to know how to do an assessment for an individual and figure out what it is that they need. And their needs are not just dental. They're a whole person when they walk in the door. You have to have an understanding of things like social determinants of health, things that we were talking about earlier about where you live in a rural area. If you're talking about patients with IDD, they could be patients, like you use the example, that they're nonverbal. I always use the example, why do babies cry, right? They're trying to tell us something and they're not speaking to us. So we have to do what we have to do to figure out, do they need their diaper changed? Are they hungry? And somehow we figure that out, right? And so in concept, that there are different ways to communicate. So everyone's going to need an assessment, and you incorporate that into how do I figure out what's the best care for this person? And sometimes it might be out of your scope, but the only way you're going to know that is if you bring them into your practice, if you sit down with them and you have that conversation and you do your evaluation and you get to know them. And if it is out of sight of your scope, how do you know where to send them? That's the other, knowing where the facilities are that provide these additional services like sedation in a hospital setting. If you set up shop, where's the closest hospital that provides an operating room with dental cases, knowing how to refer? Because the last thing I want to do, if I realize it's outside of my scope, normally if I have to do a particular type of treatment and it's outside of my scope, I'll pick up the phone and I'll call my periodontist that I always refer to. I'll pick up my phone and call my oral surgeon. But who am I going to call if I need to send them to a hospital? I don't just want to say, bye, you need to go to a hospital and not go. And that's a huge part of the puzzle that gets lost for a lot of patients, unfortunately.
And I want to highlight too that when we do that, when individuals or practitioners just refer out because it's out of their scope and they send people on their way, you know, it's really important that these individuals understand that New York State has an 8-month to 2-year wait list to be treated in an operating room setting in hospitals. It's an extraordinary amount of time that no individual should ever have to wait. So when we just refer out with no guidance, they just get added to this long wait list. So our overarching goal here at Touro is training our pre-doctoral students as well as our fellows to do what they can to treat these individuals, because most individuals can be treated in the dental chair. It might just take a little more training on their behalf to get to that comfort level and understanding of how to treat an individual. But that's what we're trained to do, treat individuals.
I love what you guys are saying, what you're both saying. I will add one piece to that. When you refer somebody out of your practice without having some really solid leads, or when you're referring them to that 2-year potential waiting list, a lot of people, whether they're the individuals themselves or their caregiver who's with them, you know, this is just a message for anybody who might feel like they're stuck and they don't know where to go with that. You're also probably sending them out like that, the way they've been sent out like that from multiple doctors' offices since they were tiny and newly diagnosed with whatever challenges that they face. That is a pervasive problem that so many families share with me. And it's thankfully being talked about more and slowly but surely being addressed, I think, earlier on. And now we're in the right place, getting into colleges and schools and educating people before they are out in the world practicing, that it almost brings the trauma right back of just being told by a pediatrician, your child has autism, and no, I don't really know much about it. Sorry. I can't tell you how many families tell us that was their first experience. They went home and they found textbooks from their old college psych classes to learn as much as they could. And then they're just out there trying to find information. So it's wonderful to hear what you are all doing. One thing that I know that you've been communicating with and working with a colleague of mine at Anderson, Gina Williamson, who's the director of our children's program. She's fabulous. And she's a trained nurse. And that's what she did at Anderson for years, and has really stayed dedicated to the health and medical well-being of all of our students and adults as she's entered into this more recent role. But one of the things I think that we're all sort of trying to collaborate on here is called dental desensitization, which at Anderson, because we serve very behaviorally complex individuals, most of whom have limited vocal skills or are completely non-vocal. So they're communicating in many different ways other than that, but also because just from a medical standpoint, and we've definitely had to take students to be in the hospital setting who couldn't really manage at all the exam setting, but also just on medical appointments. So we've got some skill in this desensitization world over a lot of things, getting ready for a blood draw, getting ready for just walking into the exam room in the nurse's office to be examined by a pediatrician, taking vitamins, taking their medicine, whatever it might be. And so I think we're kind of looking to work on expanding that in collaboration with you all around what does dental desensitization look like? How do you effectively prepare somebody who has no real basis for comparison to be able to sit in the dental chair, but also allow somebody to touch their face, their mouth, to sort of put their hands inside their mouths when you most likely have a very limited understanding of why on earth anybody would be doing this to you, even if it doesn't hurt, just why is this happening? So do you have any comments you want to share about that work and you know how you think that's going or the importance of getting more of that occurring out in the field?
Sure. I hope this will answer your question.
Anything will answer. It's just a conversation.
You mentioned our collaboration with Gina Williamson over at Anderson, and that was born out of her reaching out to us, having found out about our Smiles United project, which was a project that was born out of a grant from the Center for Developmental Disabilities. And over the years, as we've developed our affiliation between Anderson and Toral College of Dental Medicine, Anderson staff also assisted us in part of our project, which is to create videos that are accessible on our YouTube channel for specific to direct support professionals to learn about oral hygiene, to learn how to deliver oral hygiene, and to learn about those nuances, just like you're talking about. How do I understand what's going on with an individual? How can I work with them? How can I work with this desensitization? So we've been able to collaborate on that specific project. We're also looking to, hopefully we've tried to gather support and funding to actually build a dental chair at Anderson so that our students and our fellow and faculty go over there and work directly with the residents, with the students, as well as with direct support professionals to go through some of those things, just even if it's a matter of home hygiene issues that you're running into and how to recognize when you need to call the dentist. And our big global overarching goal is to also continue to be a resource for students, because you were saying, you know, when you've had to send them, you know, to the emergency department and to, you know, wait list for the operating room, Toro, we're in the fund sourcing phase of our Toro Cares facility, which is the Center for Access, Respect, Empathy, and Social Justice. And that's going to be a dedicated facility with multiple dental operatories, including operating rooms for ambulatory care under general anesthesia. Gina has helped us out with providing statistics and, you know, real life stories of what the needs are when we're trying to get together with, sourcing funds. There we go. We're hoping to continue to build that collaboration so that, and not only for Anderson, but for the surrounding community, be a resource for being able to send patients when they need these types of treatments, as well as a center for education, not just for students, but for individuals in the surrounding community.
I think you answered it beautifully. That's a lot. Thank you, Dr. DeCenzo. That's really exciting. And just on behalf of Anderson, we are thrilled to partner with you. It's sort of like a gap that's been filled perfectly. We've been talking about this for a long time. Like I said, it's one of the bigger issues that we face in terms of resources and also just an interested party. There's a lot of people who will nod their head and say, yes, it's an issue, it's a problem. There are not nearly as many right now who are saying, but let's work together to figure out some ways that we can work together to create the beginning of a solution, or at least a solution that can be a model for others, thereby creating a broader impact. Dr. Rozdalski, I know that you had mentioned earlier, how much Touro cares. And it's interesting because Anderson, one of our taglines is Anderson cares. It'll be at the end of this podcast. And it's also our email address, you know, our names and Anderson cares. So do we have that in common? Is Touro really, is it a message of just demonstrating the level of care for not just your students in the college, but also the extension of that to all of the people that then are served over their lifetime by graduates of Touro? Or maybe you can explain it further.
Absolutely. It is certainly Touro's mission to care about all individuals. If I had our mission statement up in front of us, I would read it directly for you. But that is the mission. We care about all individuals, regardless of diagnosis. And we want to train our students to do the same. So we mesh well together, Anderson, yes. And Touro, the same underlying mission statements.
Well, I will share our mission statement with you and with our listeners, because from what we've talked about today, it's very clear that you are a part of helping us accomplish our mission, which is to optimize the quality of life for individuals with autism. That can only be done if we're looking at every person as an individual, which one of you said at the first part of this interview. And if we're finding collaborative partners who bring their expertise that sort of, like you just said, meshes well with our expertise, all in the name of helping every individual with autism and IDD, and really everyone, because it also optimizes our quality of life as we're working toward that goal to just, you know, live a quality life. And we all know that dental care is a foundational aspect of our overall health and well-being, and finding ways to make it more accessible, more friendly, more welcoming, less stressful for everyone is a huge part of that. So really, congratulations to both of you on what you're doing with the fellowship and at Touro College for Dental Medicine. Thank you for being on the show and sharing your thoughts on all of this. And really, on behalf of everyone at Anderson, thank you for collaborating with Gina Williamson and the rest of our team. And we look forward to the future of continuing to work together.
Absolutely. And we thank you as well. We appreciate the collaboration.
Excellent. This is 1 in 36, the weekly talk show on topics related to autism spectrum disorder. I'm your host, Eliza Bozinski. And remember, Anderson cares.
You've been listening to 1 in 36, a weekly presentation from Anderson Center for Autism, celebrating their centennial in 2024. Join them for another edition of the show next weekend.